Hey, hey, Los Angeles. I am coming to do a live event in Santa Monica on April 24th in the evening. I'm so excited to get to hang out with you again. If you want to get your tickets, they are priced to sell out. You can go to markgroves.com/Los Angeles and go get them now. And I can't wait to see you there. We're going to hang out for an evening of intimate conversation, live coaching, all that jazz. Looking forward to it. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Mark Groves Podcast. If you've been following me for a while, you know that I'm really deeply invested in understanding how do we regulate our nervous system? How do we create more practices, more experiences? How do we use different skills to be able to manage our own experience so that we can create amazing relationships, so that we can make good choices in our lives? And we're not taught how to do this, and it makes sense that these different practices like breathwork, meditation, cold water exposure, you know, all the different ways that we build this skill of putting ourselves under some sort of hermetic stress to increase our capacity to, you know, be in what would be called the window of tolerance, this place where you still have access to your problem-solving brain. Because when you're dysregulated, you're not relational, you can't handle conflict well, you don't make good decisions about your life. You know, if you're stuck in this state of fight, flight, freeze, fawn, you're like not creating life, you're surviving life. And of course, there are circumstances in our lives that create that, but I'm like, how do we actually resource ourselves in a way by exposing ourselves to things like cold water? How does that actually make us a better person? How does that improve our lives? Because of course, that's what's important. Not only do you get a good video on the gram, and all joking aside, but you also get some sort of difference in the way you relate and the way you relate to yourself. And that's everything. You know, at the core of everything I do, and if you don't know me, my name is Mark Groves. I love talking, teaching, and learning about relationships, human connection, human systems. And how do we create epic relationships, but also more importantly, an epic life? This interview today is with someone who's an expert in the space of both breath and cold water exposure. And I wanted to do an episode actually diving deeper into the physiology and what is going on in our bodies and what temperature do we need to expose ourselves to of cold water? Is a shower versus is submersing ourselves? Like, what are all the ways in which we can maximize this? And how do we use breath in collaboration with that or also separately from that? And so I'm so excited for you to hear today's episode. Before we dive into it, if you're listening to this podcast, make sure that you hit the subscribe button wherever you're getting your podcast, because it is one way that you could support the show that costs you nothing. And it actually means everything for me. And so I really appreciate it. Make sure you hit that subscribe button. And so without further ado, let's dive into today's episode. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Mark Groves Podcast. This one has been cooking for a long time. I've been seeking an expert in this space because, as you guys know, or if you're new to the podcast, you're about to find out, I have really found immense value in cold water exposure, whether that's cold showers or cold plunging. I have noticed that, well, one, when I finish it, I feel so proud of myself. And while I'm in it, I'm like, this is fucking cold. I might die. And my brain goes, you're not actually going to die. You're actually okay. You can do hard things. And I also remember hearing, which I'm really excited for you to tell me a little more about, is that it releases the same amount of dopamine as doing cocaine. Is that?
Yeah, it's like up to 250% dopamine increase.
Okay, so I've never done cocaine, despite some assumptions on Reddit, but I've never done it. I have no interest in it because I just saw that it was probably too fun, and I am an over-consumer of everything that's too fun, which has now become cold plunging. So with all that said, I'm so excited to have Kristen Weitzel on the podcast today, who is the founder of Sherpa Breath and Cold. I mean, what a great name of a brand to welcome us into the tundra and the experience of cold plunging, which is so hot right now. Mm. And I can't imagine that's just because there's a lot of TikToks and Instagram reels about it. There's actually something happening. So my first question to you is, am I making up the experience that I have gained emotional regulation from cold plunging and showers?
Definitely not. Thanks all for right. having me here, by the
I'm
way.
I'm so excited to have
so
you
So excited
here.
For this conversation, yeah. You're not making up the experience of having emotional shifts in cold. There's so much in our neurochemistry that's really rising in the body when we're getting in and out of cold. We have these catecholamines, we have neurotransmitters, hormones, everything is shifting, both before, because the anticipation of the cold plunge is worse than the cold plunge for some people, and that, you know, worse than the cold plunge,
that's
plunge
true.
Itself. And then in the water, and even with a shower, you're getting some of that, and in the water, especially in cold water immersion. And then another shift is happening when you get out, which is helping your nervous system regulate, right? So you're having both sympathetic and parasympathetic activity happening throughout the course of, let's just say, 5 minutes. And it's a really good resiliency builder.
Well, I the reason I wanted to do this interview, everyone, is because at the core of like everything I do is how do we liberate ourselves from patterns and behaviors that are destroying our relationship, ruining our lives, you know, inserting choice between an addiction and another opportunity, you know, to choose something better for us. And we want to be able to use all the tools that are available to us to do that. And so when I'm anticipating getting in, how do I process even like that hard? You know what I mean? Like, I know the feeling. It's like when you're about to jump in a lake or you're about to turn the shower cold and you're like, fuck me. I don't want to fucking do this.
Yeah, this like anticipatory thing. And it's, you know, I'd liken it to me getting ready in the hotel today because I was excited to see you and it's the holidays and everything's going on. And I'm like, well, I'm nervous-sighted. And I thought to myself about how I'm this nervous-sighted feeling is something that just because of years and years now of cold plunging, I don't get it as much anymore.
Oh,
so it's this really beautiful moment to say, oh, how can I feel into this? And what the meta experience of like neurochemistry and things bubbling up and my nervous system shifting. And so I know how people feel beside the cold tub, right? And I think that there's an opportunity there for us to, this is why when I'm coaching people through cold, I say, without hesitation or expectation, step into the water, because there's this refractory period we want to work on best we can, lessening and lessening and lessening when we're standing by the tub and knowing that it can effectively cause change for our lives. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, people will be talking about on social media, right? We're seeing it. I always laugh because 7 years ago when I was doing 35 days, I was trying to do a 30-day straight cold plunge, but then people kept coming over my house to be like, wait, one more day. So I did 35 days straight on Instagram, like chopping ice in my freezer that was like up on my rooftop in LA. And then I was in a trough on my rooftop. My neighbors were like yelling things out the window at me. Like people were like, are you okay? Like not knowing.
Has she lost her mind?
Yeah, that people were mostly thought you were insane, you know, and even though, you know, we know that people have been doing this cold dipping and wild swimming hundreds of thousands of years, I imagine. So starting with that process really got me to feel into what it was like to shift my state. And then now it's become so popularized. People have been doing it, especially there's a couple of men that have been doing it like 2 years straight, right? Every day in the cold.
Really? 2 years straight?
Yeah.
I'd be fascinated yeah. to see how it affects their blood chemistry.
Yeah. Yeah. And they don't always all share labs. Some of them will from time to time, but like Thomas Seeger shares a lot of like N of one lab work for himself, what he's doing around testosterone boosts and things that people really, we want to understand more, right? It takes science, quote unquote, or medicine, 20 years right. to catch up. They want all of this additional research. And the one thing to say about cold when it comes to science and research is there's a lot of research and it's all over the place, right? Which is both positive and negative.
Right.
It's positive in the sense that it's like, wow, there's so much research. It's like an arm in the cold, the palms are cold, the full body immersion, it's wild swimming, the temperatures are different, the time is different, the bodies in the cold are different. Are they menopausal women? Are they 18-year-old collegiate men?
Right.
You know, are they athlete? Are they sedentary population? And so much research existing is a beautiful thing. And then not enough research specifically, like, for example, I'm working with a company on getting some research done around clinically diagnosed vets with PTSD, using cold to mitigate symptoms of that and perhaps alleviate it all. And this, you know, the veterans associations around, let's say, North America or the world are like, well, we need more research to put in cold tubs, right? So we're doing this because there is no specific cold research on PTSD, clinically diagnosed. And the response that happens if you have some protocol. So I developed a protocol we'll use in the research. Hopefully it will be positive outcomes. You never know. And then publish it so that other veteran associations can say, okay, we have research. Now we can fund getting tubs in here, right? So it takes time to sort of weave into common practice and then where it can really make a difference helping people.
So what does the data say in terms of like temperature, time, frequency, and, you know, then maybe we could dive into like what areas currently have some evidence in terms of their benefit.
Yeah, for sure. The evidence says if you pull it all together and you summarize it, this is what I like to speak about specifically, which is I believe that anyone who doesn't have a contraindication can do cold exposure of some kind. And most people can get away with a cold shower, even just 30 seconds. But because I'm a biohacker and I'm into longevity, I want to make sure I'm getting, if I'm going to do the thing, I'm going to get the max benefits out of it. So I'm going to look at the most important thing I talk about in Sherpa Breath and Cold is context is king and safety is queen, right? We have to be safe. There's plenty of safety things we can talk about. Don't want to be out in the Arctic tundra alone.
a cut a hole in a lake.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Swim under the ice. You see this a lot on social media too. So it's like have an ice buddy. But there are so many ways to do cold exposure that are not that, right? So how do we apply the variables and what's the best thing, right? Context is king. Someone who is, like I'm working with an Olympic skater right now who's pretty cold adapted because she's, not because she's in cold tubs, but because she's skating on ice 4 or 5 hours a day.
In a little
outfit.
Leotard,
or whatever.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
And so that's a very different style of protocol or just like a plan or an exercise that I'm going to have her do than, let's say, someone who comes to me that's like a super heightened, stressed executive who's 100 pounds overweight, who's very sedentary. Yeah. It's just a different protocol. But what I find is most anyone in general population that's generally healthy and doesn't have a contraindication, anyone can do about 3 minutes in 40 degree or so water.
Wow.
Right?
So 40 is cold.
And, you know, when I worked with Laird Hamilton Gabby Reese, who founded a program that talks about cold exposure and breath and all the things that I'm, you know, my peak expression in the world, they really, you know, pulled enough research to all of us sort of say, it feels like the cold shock protein activation happens around 40 degrees Fahrenheit, right? Or 40 degrees.
Damn. And so
we
want to lower the temperature.
We want to get there.
Yeah.
We want to get there. And then, you know, there's also something to be said about you adapt over time. Like if you're plunging all the time, right, you're going to adapt. And so how do you actually push your edges or push your wall, as our Lord Huberman would call it?
Yeah.
It's like, how do you push your wall to the next level so that you are creating more something to adapt against, right? You want to have a hormetic stressor, a positive stressor. So you have to take the temperature down a little, make the time a little bit longer, right? And then the thing that no one really does, and I think about this when I think about the people who are plunging every day, is what do you do, like reduce the level of cold that you're doing so that you can get your body to sort of fall off a little and readapt, right? That's like something this is why we do deload in the gym, right? We take deload weeks off so that we can recover a bit and then go back and readapt to some of those things. So, you know, there's all these opportunities to play with the variables, but generally speaking, 3 minutes, 40 degrees. And again, like no one needs to crush their soul. I interviewed Dr. Stacy Sims, who's like a phenom researcher and triathlete who trains triathletes. And she puts the females that, like, this is where context is important. She puts her female swimmers into cold tubs in that 50 degree range. It's not that she doesn't want them to get longevity benefits or she doesn't think they can handle it, but like they're swimming in 50 to 55 degrees, right? So she wants them to adapt and manage not having mammalian dive reflex when they're in a swim at 50 degrees, because the last thing you want when you're racing is for your natural body's mechanisms to slow your heart rate down because you're like trying to get to the end of the race, right? So it's so important when it comes to context. But for most people who are listening here, you know, this is like a 3 minute, start at 45 if you want and start for 2 minutes. Great. But I'm a firm believer that yesterday in the hotel, I saw a couple of women, I did a cold plunge at the place that I'm staying here. A couple of women sort of get in the cold and be like, woo, and then just get right out.
Yeah.
And I'm a firm believer that we have more ability than that and that we can learn life's lessons from that. Right. Because we can talk all we want about metabolism today and science and all these things, but life's lessons, I really believe, are a microcosm of life in the cold.
Yeah, it's like on top of all the physiological benefits, you're also getting these psychological benefits of, you know, as I said before, it's like I can do hard things. And then what that translates to is being able to take a deeper breath in a moment of a trigger, being able to actually, you know, there's a saying that the opposite of trauma is choice. So it's like you're inserting more space. You know, I always think of that. I think it's Viktor Frankl's quote, like between stimulus and response, there's a space. And in that space, you know, I think you choose your life or change your life. And I think cold water exposure for me has really like extended that space on top of meditation, which the cold water exposure is a meditation.
As spring unfolds in the Northern Hemisphere, for those of us who have endured the winter, it's time to swap out our essential gear for warmer days. And a key part of this transition is replacing my cozy winter duvet with something that is lighter. And the Cloud Knit blanket from Cozy Earth is definitely my top pick for that. This blanket strikes the perfect balance. It keeps me warm during the lingering spring chill, and it's light enough for the rising temperatures. What sets Cozy Earth apart is their commitment to quality and comfort. Every item they create is exceptionally soft and designed for temperature regulation. Plus, the machine washable feature ensures convenience without compromising the texture. In other words, there's no snags on textiles like the knit of the Cloud blanket. Crafted from premium materials, Cozy Earth's products are ethically made, reflecting their dedication to responsible production. And what truly resonates with me is how Cozy Earth goes beyond creating fantastic products. They embody values like living well and serving others and weave these principles into each item they produce. So speaking of their serving heart, Cozy Earth has generously offered for our listeners to get a massive 40% off all their products. Just head over to CozyEarth.com and use the code MARK at checkout. That's CozyEarth.com and use MARK for 40% off.
Oh, yeah.
And so what are the physiological things that are happening when we get into the water?
Yeah. So the first thing is we're having a nervous system response, right? Depending on how often you've done it or how bold or brave you are or how nervous you are, or sometimes people are like voluntold. It's like, we're going cold plunging, honey. Yeah. Someone's like, damn it. So how do you feel at the side of the tub? That's going to, you know, set a rise into your sympathetic nervous system. Now, most people who are listening to this show, I imagine, will have heard of Wim Hof, right?
It's yeah.
the guy that we
I've
all probably.
Him. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So amazing.
Ago.
Amazing. Such
he
a quirky dude,
that.
Right?
I was like, what hole should people breathe out of, like nose or mouth? He's like, I don't care the hole. Breathe out of your asshole. I was like, that was the quote of the interview.
Yeah. That's amazing.
So good.
Yeah, so most people know him. A lot of us are sitting here, I think, because we watched his work over time and saw how beautiful, you know, the shifts he had in his physiology, and also some of them feeling superhuman because he's done it for so long, right? This is a note and a nod to consistency is so important. But Wim, you know, what he's known for is this sort of breath cadence before, where you're actually charging up your nervous system before you get in the water. And that is so that when you get in the water, because what happens is you step into the cold water and you have a sympathetic response. And isn't that amazing? Because that's our body and it's protecting us. And that's our brain and that's our breath thinking, okay, maybe this isn't something I should do, because it doesn't know we're deliberately stepping into the cold. So it's having a response to give us a little fight or flight to get out of the situation if it's dangerous. And while I totally, you know, all respect and love what Wim's method is, that the one that he's known for the most, and I think it's beautiful and it totally works, it's not the way I start beginners out with their breath, because I firmly believe we want to get in the ice bath to get good at life. So I'm going to breathe people a little bit more calmly and parasympathetically next to the tub so that they can learn how to get back to that as quickly as possible after that shock reflex hits.
Mm-hmm.
So you step into the water and you have that shock reflex that hits you. And thankfully, that happens.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't, you know, you're either in cold water a lot of times or maybe feeling into how much you disassociate as a human is kind of a good thing to check in on, right? So you step into the water, you have this shock response, gasp reflex.
Yeah.
A lot of times that's where it's like, oh, fuck, whose idea was this? Get me out of here. You know, whatever happens. And you sit in the water. And the number one thing I tell people who are new is just get to 30 seconds. Just get to 30 and mostly like 60 seconds. It's like get to that 30 to 60 second mark, because the most beautiful thing happens around there. And I call it the turnover. Some people I work with call it the bliss point. But it's this moment when physiologically your body is shunting the blood to the core. So it's shunting the blood to the core to protect your organs, to keep you warm where it counts. It's not worried about your arms and legs. It's like, we don't need those right now.
Yeah.
And you're getting tingles in your fingers and your toes, perhaps, most likely, many people do, totally normal when that happens because of the blood movement in the system. And then you're at the same time realizing that you're doing this thing that you deliberately decided to do, or, yeah, you know, with your friends, or people are cheering you on, or you have a song playing or whatever it is, but your mind is saying, wow, I'm doing the hard thing. I'm actually staying in, right? And we get to that 30 to 60 second mark. And if you're up to your neck, which is why I encourage people to get up to their neck or their cheeks even, then you have mammalian dive reflex. And so all of those things, the mammalian dive response and those two other things happening, they sort of have this moment of turnover, where if you're watching someone, and I say this as like a nerd speak to, because I've put at this point probably one-on-one over like 4,000 people in ice baths in my career. And so when you watch that many bodies over and over and over again, you can see the moment. It's almost this like, it's a crossover between like surrender and enlightenment. Like people's eyes get wider and they realize I'm doing the hard thing, and their heart rate is slowing down simultaneously, because when you get the neck and the cheeks in and the body temperature is in, when you're in cold water, the body is like, we need to slow the heart rate. It thinks perhaps you're underwater and it wants to slow the heart rate so you don't have to, you're conserving oxygen.
Interesting.
And so all of that is happening at one time. And in this minute mark, let's say around 60 seconds, you see people be like, and then settle. And then they're, and you'll feel this if you sort of like tap into your awareness of your own body. And it's really beautiful. I've had people who are like, oh my God, I don't think I can do it. I can do it. I don't know. And it's like 30 seconds, 40 seconds, 50 seconds, whatever. They get right towards that minute and they're like, can we do 5 minutes today? And you're like, what? How did this happen? But it's this, it's this like cacophony of things happening all at one time that sort of settle into the body and then your brain. And then you're like, oh, I'm just being in the water and I'm present and I'm tackling this. I'm doing this hard thing.
Yeah.
What is so amazing?
It is so amazing, especially when you do. I've both experienced the moment you're talking about where you're like, oh, I'm not dead. This actually feels enlivening.
Yeah.
And now my standing beside the tub, there's an excitation, but also like, this is going to be hard. And I always set my timer and with like 15 seconds to get in. And then I'm like, okay, we got to be in by the minute mark.
Yeah.
And it's amazing to just now look forward to it.
Yeah.
I hadn't done it in a while because I moved. And so when I finally got my plunge again, I was like, okay. And the first few times I started at 54, I think. Mm-hmm. And then I dropped it to 48. Then I dropped it to 44. I haven't dropped it to 40, though. I will. Now that I've heard this.
I mean, you know, pressure, no pressure.
Yeah, right? Like, listen, you challenged me? Okay, fuck, let's go. What is the mammalian dive reflex?
Yeah, I mean, it's set up in our physiology so that we, if we were like pushed underwater, comes from, you know, perhaps we would say when we lived underwater, which it comes in our physiology. If we're pushed underwater, scuba divers navigate this quite a bit if they're doing cold dives, like in dry suits. But it is something that's set up for us to slow our heart rate and utilize oxygen more slowly so that we can stay underwater longer, you know, and like have a chance to survive. Like the body is so complex and so smart and so much faster and smarter at navigating what needs to happen than our brains are. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes total sense. And it makes me think about all of the journeys of understanding that I've had in the last, you know, I don't even know, 7-18 years since I left pharma. Or sorry, I left pharma 10-11 years ago. But since I like really woke up to asking questions, like, why do I do what I do? But these layerings just keep happening with everything in my life. Like, I always think of like IIN's principle as the Institute for Integrative Nutrition. Their principle is like, what is nourishing in your life? Not just food nourishment, but like everything. Is it nourishing? And I think we often think of nourishment as only being positive experiences. But of course, all of us, when we've explored the complexities of our lives and the traumas we've had, we realize that there's so much gold in the hardest things. Mm-hmm. I think of the most transformational moments of my life have been the hardest moments. Not that joy or excitation or all those things haven't been amazing, or orgasms as I look back upon my life, but it's that there is something profound about experiencing the depths of one's own heart. Mm-hmm. And then being able to say, as my son said when we landed on the plane, he was previously kind of scared of flying for a couple flights. He said, we made it. And so I always think like now how beautiful, it makes me emotional to think about it because I think all of us get to say, we made it.
Yeah.
And it makes me think about just like how I'm discovering, like what food am I putting in my body? Is it whole? And that's, you know, like the program, the Whole 30 was kind of like this revolutionary, mm-hmm. but it was really saying like, eat food that isn't put through machines and smashed into bars and all that kind of stuff where the ingredients are original things. Mm. That's so obvious. And now I'm pretty excited about Maha because it's, you know, at least regardless of people's opinions about all the politics, why is it partisan to think let's bring profound health to every human on the planet and let's explore where are these industries, ag, food, you know, ag, food, pharma, all of it, tech, how are they fucking with us? And how are they putting profit ahead of like we need to take back choice? And cold plunging allows, or showers or whatever, allow us this opportunity to be really discerning. Mm-hmm. And to be able to say, like, what do I want my days to compose of? And I would argue that very predictive of your day is your start to your day. Mm-hmm. I am curious, though, is cold water exposure best at the beginning of the day? Or is there, like, a timing thing?
Yeah, I think, well, for men seem to be able to, like, tolerate early morning and frequency, higher frequency, like, daily plunges better than women. And I say that not because we're not fabulously and powerful females, but because if we go in with dysregulated hormones, because our hormone fluctuation is so different, you know, my friend, Dr. Kayla Osteroff always says, we're 4 different people over the month. And I'm like, I'm 30 different people over the month, you know, but our hormone fluctuation is so different than the male 24-hour hormone cycle and all of that, that it's just a nice, I'm more conservative on women plunging harder, longer, faster every single day. I think we can get the job done very consistently 3 to 4 times a week. Again, consistent is so important. And I really like, I'm a fan of morning cold plunges. For me, it's really like, well, what's conducive to the logistics of my day? And my favorite time of day, if you ask me, is I love to do like a just pre like sunsetting cold plunge. And then when I get out, have a shiver response, have like 30, 40 minutes to like cook some dinner, cut some veggies, chop some things up while I'm like, my hunger's really building. And then to like eat this amazing dinner when I'm starving and my metabolism is fired and all that. So I just sort of love that unwinding into the evening. When I had a cold plunge at my house before the apartment I'm in now, that's just how I would do it. You know, most days of the week.
I've heard it does help for sleep regulation if you do it like 2 to 3 hours before bedtime.
Yeah, yeah.
Not too close because of the excitation.
Not too close to bedtime. But yeah, because you have parasympathetic rebound.
Yeah, so what happens after I get out? What's going on in my physiology?
So we get in, we regulate ourselves hopefully with some breath or a coach or friends or something. Mm-hmm. And then we get out and we have this beautiful cascade of a parasympathetic rebound. So oxytocin and other neurochemicals in the brain are like being released. And it's sort of the cascade of all of the norepinephrine and dopamine, everything that's happening, right? Serotonin that we're getting from the tub. And we feel joyful and we feel like we can express and maybe we feel emotional and we have, it's the body's mechanism saying, just what happened with your son. We made it.
Right, yeah.
We made it. We lived. We survived this cold thing that we didn't really understand that we were deliberately doing, you know? So it's putting those bliss chemicals into the body. This is why I used to have these like high-powered producers, million-dollar movie budgets on LA come over, very stoic. And they'd get an ice bath and then they'd get out of the ice tub and within a minute or so, they'd be like singing Lion King or like just this whole, and you get to see, this is Mark, what's so incredible. And I think sort of leads into a lot of the conversation about how these are healing practices. You get to see people in their most uninhibited, like 10-year-old self when they get out of the cold plunge. Mm. It's just, we come into this world as, you know, beautiful souls. And I think that we have massive capacity for greatness. And And this, I'm a part of this process as well. We go through our lives, we layer these constructs and what people's other, you know, other people are telling us, society, environment, all the negative self-talk, all the heartache, everything that we have, we layer it on us with these constructs. And then we're kind of walking around carrying the suit of armor. And I think that the cold cuts right through that, like faster than anything. I've done a lot of biohacking, a lot of health optimization, and I always, you know, some fails, but for the most part, a lot of great things. And there are no two modalities like me putting breath and cold together that just create effective, efficient, drastic change in people's lives. And not just their lives, but what they think about themselves, which, like, isn't that the most important thing? And isn't with all the work that you're doing, like, that's the thing. I'm coming off of the you know, a little of this because I got choked up at the table when we first met, but I'm coming off of like the most challenging emotional 18 months of my life. And without cold and without breath and without an understanding of the nervous system, I would not have been able to navigate it at all. I mean, at all, because it was just profound that I was like, oh, I work in nervous system. I'm a nervous system DJ and breath and cold. I'm fine. I never had anxiety in my life. And then it's like a January of this past year. And I'm like, what is this feeling that's happening to my body? I don't understand this. And it was such a compassion driver for me to be like, I'm coaching people all the time and I understand they have anxiety and understand, but you don't really understand until you really get hit with it in a way that you're like, oh, this is what it is. And it's just, it's the silver lining, right? Of the, you talked about the positives, the joys, the excitement, all we learn from, but we learn from the biggest challenges that we face so much more profoundly, whether we want to own that or not.
Yeah.
We don't want it to happen. But then when those things happen, we learn. I've never been so emotionally tapped into other people, so compassionate. And I just, especially for your audience, these practices, I say these practices because you can't really do cold without breath, at least one where you're like, you know, but these practices and being in the cold, it's the most massive pattern interrupt. And there were days that I was like, how do I get off the couch, out of the bed, stop crying? And to have a pattern interrupt like that, it's beautiful, right? It's like shifting your state. It's giving you neurochemistry to back it up. And I just, as we're talking about like pharma and ag and tech and all that, I just interviewed this woman, Nicole Gibson. She's quite a visionary. We talked a lot about the body and how the nervous system and the fascial tissue. It's like, I interview all these, just like you, like I interview all these crazy, beautiful, amazing humans, but like a gross anatomist and like a tech person who's working on nervous system tracking. And you put all these things together, you start to see like our nervous system, it's like every 200th of a millisecond, it is tracking some emotion, some state, right? So it's like, oh, a stimulus happens. Okay, it's this, it's happening every 200 milliseconds. And our brain, and perhaps even our breath, isn't even, like we have no way to notice that first. It's being noticed before we can. And when I say to you, hey, Mark, how are you feeling? And you go, I feel good. I feel pretty happy today. Like that's an aggregation of 50 or so moments of those nervous system check-ins that happen, right? And then we develop in our brain this, I'm happy or I'm sad or I'm not feeling great today or I'm tired, or we develop and we label that an emotion, right? We label it a feeling. And so it's really interesting to see how there's so many ways that we can be not supported by the tools in the world, whether it's nutrition, how we nourish ourselves with it, tech and agra and stuff. And there's also people that are really trying to work on how can we navigate and track our nervous system in a better way. And I think part of the work you're doing is bringing people into their own awareness, right? Of their attachment style or their nervous system tone or whatever it might be. And these are things we can all do a better job, including me, of navigating as we integrate and interact with other humans.
The first time I ever cold plunged was at a friend's house, and I remember the water was 54 degrees. I jumped in it. I mean, I really gripped my teeth, and I stuck through it for 45 seconds. I leaped out of that water, and I remember two things. One, I felt so proud of myself, and two, I felt so alive. And I then made it a part of my routine because I could never forget how good I felt, even though I was sticking through something very uncomfortable. And little did I know that it would build resilience, it would build nervous system capacity, it would build more awareness of what's going on in my body, emotionally, relationally, in all capacities of my life. And so one of the greatest investments I ever made in my health and my relationships, surprisingly, was my cold plunge. I never thought that that would be the answer if you asked me, you know, 8 years ago. And that upgrade from going from cold showers to cold plunging is really about, one, convenience and being able to control that water no matter the outdoor temperature. And so Plunge is my favorite company. It's been the one that has been my go-to. It offers state-of-the-art cold therapy tubs to help boost recovery, energy, and as we've talked about, overall wellness. Now, their iconic cold plunge tub uses powerful cooling, filtration, and sanitation to give you perfectly chilled, clean water whenever you want it. No ice needed. So if this resonates with you and you're ready to make that investment and really, you know, build your capacity for more emotional regulation through cold water exposure, go to markgroves.com/plunge, P-L-U-N-G-E, and you'll save $150 off with the code MARKGROVES. I can't wait for you to dive right in. Yeah, it was so fascinating for me to be able to track like glucose response and then HRV and the impact on all of those from cold water and then dietary, all of it. And seeing that my glucose spikes when I get into, not really substantially, but it goes up when I get into cold water. Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting to see over time because I haven't worn a CGM in a little bit, but I'm going to put one on again right after Christmas.
Yeah.
Because I, you know, I'm going to have those dinners. I don't need to be seeing it. But I mainly eat more of like a keto style of eating.
Yeah.
So it'd be really fascinating to see how my, as I regulate my nervous system and it doesn't code it as an emergency or like that I'll get better at regulating, which I've thought a lot about this. I'm actually in talks with a friend of mine who works at UNLV about doing a study on the impact of social media checking on glucose regulation. Because I actually was thinking that checking it over time, trolls, comments, dealing with all that stuff is probably on some level dumping a lot of glucose consistently and maybe like a slow killer for creators. I don't know. It's been like an interesting, because I, when I left social media, that's what I was really exploring is like I got an email that was about something, I forget, like legal. Yeah. And I remember I had a CGM on and I'm like, oh, damn. And then I was hanging out. Helping my in-laws with their horse, putting them away. And the horse did like some sort of buck thing. And I'm like, not a cowboy. So I was not qualified to operate a horse at that level. But I checked a couple hours and about an hour later, I was fasting. I checked my glucose and it was around the same as when I got the email. And I was like, wow, like our body can't differentiate these two things. What are we doing to our bodies with all these experiences and how important it is to learn what does it feel like to be heightened? And then to experience that 1 minute in, like, so I have access.
Totally.
And what you said about, like, when you get out and your body's, like, shivering and what is happening to the body in that process. And I do want to talk about the post-breakup stuff, but, like, what happens in the body in the process of getting out? Like, what is going on physiologically that is magical to healing?
Yeah.
Or maybe both. Like
so
the
so
cold
many
water
things.
And,
I think, yeah. The I want to just touch on one thing. So this question is important. Let's just hold it with a small pin, which is the common vernacular is like you need to regulate your nervous system, right? And I think for many people that there's this notion of like calm. I need to calm the fuck down or whatever it is, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like a really beautifully regulated emotional nervous system, like is a beautifully regulated nervous system is going to, my silly analogy is you're like admiring this beautiful big oak tree on the, you know, side, somewhere on the side of a road and you're like, wow, it's so beautiful. And then you like see this, you hear this noise and your system turns on and you see this like Mack truck barreling down this tiny road and it's going super fast. And then you notice there's like a baby crawling across the street and you're like, holy shit, I have to go run. I'm going to run and like grab and save the baby before the Mack truck comes barreling down and roll to the other side of the street and like get up. And then you have this baby and you can't be like, wah! You have to like coo the baby and calm the baby down. And the truck goes by and you're like, okay, we're okay. It's like how I navigate my nervous system and bring it up to a sympathetic state of excitatory nature that's going to get me to get the baby and get into action and move and then save the baby and then downregulate it quickly. Again, this refractory period, making it less. That's how we want to think about our entire lives, right? Everything that's happening. It's like we see this, you see it with little kids, right? Where they're like the shiny object syndrome, or they have a cry, or they make a big cry face and they're like about to go all in on that cry. And then they're like, oh, but wait a second, my bunny, or something happens. So it's not to say we shouldn't be indifferent or disassociative, or to feel the feelings. And also, how can we move through them, right? It's like 90 seconds that you're actually feeling the intensity of the emotion. And then how can we move through them and really, and I think it's important to say, because a regulated nervous system is, you know, a highly flexible, Martin McPhillamy calls it arousal flexibility. Like, so we're building, like, just like we build metabolic flexibility. Build arousal flexibility.
It would be highly correlated. You know, I would imagine that dysregulated, stuck nervous systems, whether it's in fight, flight, freeze, fawn, or moving between the dysregulation and never into sympathetic. It's like, or into parasympathetic, right?
Into parasympathetic,
Never moving into parasympathetic, that we're like stuck. Like, you could feel the like anxiety, the agitation, the trigger, the defensiveness, right? We, you know, that would, of course, like if our foods are also putting us in high glucose states. I remember reading a study about how kids who eat higher sugar diets, like when they, I think it was in like juvenile delinquents, that they were more likely to re-offend if they were eating really high amounts of sugar. Which, that's not shocking. Like, it's often that, like, I always laugh, like, when someone's like, forest bathing works. Of course it fucking does. Like, have you ever sat beside a tree? You know, and it's like, science proves, like, you don't need it to prove that kind of thing.
Yeah, and you see blood sugar, I mean, blood sugar, this is like a workout, right? For many people, blood sugar will spike a bit in the initial stages of the cold. You can see it on a CGM, and then it's like, what's the fall off look like? And over time, those spikes become less.
Yeah.
And in over time, what we see, it's by, about consistent cold practice, is that it actually helps you regulate insulin in your blood sugar.
After, right? Like, it's like a workout in the morning makes your insulin more regulated through the day, even, you know, depending on what you eat. But it will, even if you eat sugar loads, it'll, or carbohydrates, it'll stay more regulated.
Yeah.
So cold doing the same thing, which is.
Yeah. And like we activate at around 40, like let's say that's like, you know, someone's going to call me out and be like, it's 41.5. But we activate the cold shock proteins. That just means like the better they fold, the better the cells can communicate with each other, the better everything happens in the body. So it's like this, the polar opposite with the sauna. We want heat shock protein activation, or we want cold shock protein activation. We want our cells to communicate better, and then we can deal with the things that are coming up. Our cells can deal with our overall health and well-being in a better way. But there is research to see, like you read it in, there's a book called Common Cold that that Tom Seeger wrote, that really, it brings a lot of great research together in one book, which is beautiful. And it talks a lot about how there's the ability for the body to regulate insulin and blood sugar. So it's like, great, just like morning light, just like,
Getting back into your circadian cycles, circadian cycles, also with blue light and blue light, how it interrupts melatonin production. And melatonin is such a precursor for some of our most important hormones. You know, and vitamin D being so important for cholesterol. Like, they're, all of these things are, in, as you said earlier, the body is fucking brilliant and like complex.
So much smarter than we are.
Right. And it's like trying to say like, hey, you feel anxiety when you use your phone because we need to like actually not be exposed to as much blue light. We need to actually be looking up at the people we love's eyes. We need to be looking in the world. I think of like Ram Dass was such a trailblazer with just the simple statement, be here now. And I'm curious. So one, what is the parasympathetic response that's happening when I get out, and how's that beneficial to my day? And then maybe that will speak to, I also want to talk about hot, cold. How's that beneficial to my day? And then what's the data in terms of like treatment of anxiety, depression, anything like that?
Yeah. So parasympathetic rebound is the initial body's response of saying, we made it, we survived, we did the thing. And it's the fall off of some of the sympathetic chemistry in the body. And it's also, you know, as we're putting norepinephrine, epinephrine, or adrenaline, dopamine, serotonin into the body. These are things that are like rising in the body that also help us mitigate stress, help us mitigate pain, give us more tolerance to things. And when we get out, we also feel like we survived. So all those things are hitting at one time. And if you're doing it with people, like we have oxytocin, right? The hormone of love, that it's really a bonding chemical. Like if you've ever cold plunged with anybody, especially if it's their first time, they remember they remember you. That's for sure. People will come up to me in the street, but you did my first cold plunge with me. Oh my God, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's a really beautiful opportunity to be connected. You know, it's like when we talked about morning routine earlier, can you imagine if you didn't look at your phone, you got up, you got sunlight in your eyes, you get serotonin response in the cold tub. You did that first thing in the morning. You got out because serotonin is the precursor to your melatonin for sleep at night. So it's going to, you know, preclude that your sleep will be a bit better. And you had that whole morning routine going. You'd get out of the tub and you'd feel like, okay, I've set myself up for the most successful day, you know? And when we look at, you know, I looked at a lot of both with this PTSD research project and then just coming to sit with you, I've been looking at a lot of, generally the work I do is like too much research review for someone who's like not a researcher, but reading through it and just really seeing how people are, and again, I'm not a medical doctor. I'm not telling people to get off medication. Everyone's going to have a strong opinion about what they think about meds in general, like pharmaceuticals, but people who are like wanting to get off medication and not finding any other way to do it. And then they're starting to wild swim or they're feeling like, I don't know how I'm going to turn the corner, right? This is an expression that I waited for so long this year. It was like, when am I going to turn the corner?
I know that feeling.
And turning the corner and everyone's telling you, you're going to turn a corner. It's all going to be okay. And you want to be like, fuck you. It's not happening right now.
This is happening for you. And you're like, oh, fuck you. Still to me. Still in the to me phase.
Still happening right now in my face. Yeah.
Yeah.
But really just noticing with the frequency of the cold, with even getting in when you don't want to. It's like also about the commitment to yourself, right? And then you get out and you feel all of this beautiful chemistry in the body and it just feels like joy and excitement and relief in some way and connection if you're there with other people or maybe just connection to yourself or like a higher power or the universe or whatever it is. And it changes you. It changes your chemistry for the day. It changes your metabolism for the next 36 hours. It changes so much of what's happening in your human that quite often, you know, people's feedback, you look at the research, it's like hard for people to not feel better.
Right.
You know, coming off of, look, whether we want to talk about like big T, little T trauma, or whether it's like, you know, sadness or depression or anxiety, or there's lots of, you know, terminology we can talk about. It is undeniable when you look across all of the science that there are 100% mood boosting benefits. And this is why when people are like, how much brown fat did you make on your last ice bath? And I'm like, I don't actually give a shit. Because for me, the game changer here is getting people better at life, getting people to step into their human, the best version of their human, and getting people to navigate the hardest times of their life by practicing something. Because the divorce is going to come. Like perhaps, right? Or the bad phone call, or you're going to get fired, or whatever shows up. And if we're sitting around on our comfy couch, drinking Starbucks, waiting for it to happen, then it's going to hit really hard.
Yeah, if we don't have the tools.
If we don't have the tools and we don't have the practice and we're not building resiliency and we're not like, for me, the other thing in cold, and I know that, like, listen, there's so much about what I do right now and the emotionality of it. We know in the science, there's so many mood boosting and state shifting capacity of these hormones and these neurotransmitters, full stop.
Right.
And so much of when I get in the cold myself, when I work with clients, it's like, I think in that moment, every plunge for me, I say, what's the lesson that the ice is teaching me today? It's the moment that in the throes of my day or the excitement or the joy or the sadness or whatever's coming up for me, I get into the cold and I can get the answer to where I'm literally at. Like, oh, you're being really, and I'll say it out loud. If I'm alone, I'll say it out loud to myself sometimes. You're being really hard on yourself. Oh, you haven't celebrated any wins lately. Like things will come out of my body and my mouth or into my psyche that are like, where did that come from? It's just like, it's a telling.
The walls
time.
Are dropped through the cold, which is like, HIIT training and then doing personal work. It like crushes you because you don't have the energy to pretend anymore
Wow.
Yeah, when you were talking about your breakup and serendipitously we found ourselves at a dinner together with a bunch of mutual friends in Austin, which of course happens in Austin. It's like the new LA, except maybe less woke. I don't know.
Mostly woke. I have a friend down there who's like, we're mostly woke.
Yeah, it's close. It's maybe a healthy version or diversity of it. And it's when I went through the breakup with Kylie, I'd already created my breakup course before that. But when I was immersed back in that, I had forgotten how deeply painful. Like I hadn't forgotten, but I hadn't touched it. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden it was like I added stuff to the course because it was from this more empathic, like I'm actually in this now. And I, in my like desire for people to just like, don't marinate in this shit, feel it, but don't marinate in it. But like your breakup is, you know, this opportunity for you, all the ways you've forgotten about yourself, all the ways, you know, that there's actually a lot of material here mm-hmm. for us to work through. That will make you the most badass human you've ever been. And when we went through that breakup, I really committed to that as my mission and feeling it through. Mm-hmm. And I'd never gone through a breakup sober before. So there was like, I couldn't escape the depths of my grief. It was a lot of the grief that I felt was old grief that was like opened up through this grief.
Yeah, same.
Yeah, and that's why I think when like the grief or sadness or something doesn't match necessarily, not that adult relationships can't be deeply, you know, the losses can't be traumatic on some level. But it's like when there's like a really heightened, we're like thrown to the depths, then it's usually just like, and maybe the relationship pattern itself is born from never having processed that mm-hmm. fully. Mm-hmm. Because like who's walking us through the like experience of a breakup with grace when you're like 13, 15, or even the loss of a parent or parents getting divorced or parents not being able to show up for us, not being emotionally regulated, like all the realities of being a human.
Yeah.
You know, that's why when we met and then I got to discover the things you did, I was like, you need to add some of this stuff to my breakup course mm-hmm. because I realize how important it is. It's all incomplete without the recognition of the nervous system. And what's, I always would talk about like one of the first lessons in the course is like, this is a normal physiological response. Like you missing them, you wanting them back, you, because, you know, in the research, when they look at someone who, let's say, has a spouse who dies, widowed, their brains light up in the same places as cocaine addiction. Mm. So, of course, we're like addicted to them. And we all know that feeling. It's mm-hmm. like, I've got to look at their Instagram stories. I've got to find out how happy they are now without me so I can suffer. I'm going to put Adele on. Everything's going to be
negative pleasure.
I'm just going to get so fucked. Now you understand masochism. Everything's like. My friend said to me once that we listen to sad music to remind us that other people are sad too. Mm. That in some way, like, the music allows us to go into the feeling, but I think we can so often get stuck there. And so as you're saying, like you're going to get hit with the thing.
Yeah.
The call is going to come. The experience is going to happen. And have you proactively designed yourself as a human being to be like as highly responsive and to have choice in that response? Mm-hmm. But because man, life is hard. I mean, yeah. and I feel like life is more unpredictable in this current moment, timestamping this podcast episode. There's just a lot of unknown.
Yeah.
And when humans are in the unknown, one, you're in an edge of creativity that's never been seen. But the other side is that it's very easy to just be stuck and sympathetic mm-hmm. because we're like hypervigilant. And who, after COVID and like the constant immersion of fear.
Oh my gosh.
And told that healthy people are dangerous and that your person who disagrees with you politically or medically is a threat to your survival. I mean, the amount of psychological destruction that has occurred, in my opinion, at the hands of people who were in charge of the messaging, which I think is by design to try to influence behavior to choose a product. I get it. But we're all the ones left to clean up the pieces of that.
For sure, the mess. It was six weeks in COVID that I was like, I'm not going to go to my rooftop to get in the cold for 6 weeks. Like, for me, that's a long time. And I was like, I woke up one morning, I don't even know what changed. I was like, why am I, it's my roof. My like neighbors are watching or like
air.
What? Yeah, like just, it was so
weird.
We
weren't allowed to surf.
Yeah, I know. I was like in California, which was really like, really, I was out sprinting in the streets in front of my house and people were giving me like, people like saying things to me or yelling at me or just acting all sorts of ways. Like, what are you doing outside? And I was like, I'm alone sprinting in the streets, trying to get some kind of fitness and fresh air. Like, it just didn't make sense for me. You know, it was a hard time. And
I think for so many of us, for everybody, you know, no matter a perspective or every, that's hard on everybody. And I think when we're building tools like you're talking about, you are slammed with the necessary part of being in the moment. And like when you're cold, doing anything mm-hmm. with the cold. Mm-hmm. I'm curious, Why breath in combination? Like, what is the sort of symbiotic merger of those two things?
Yeah, breath is it's the gatekeeper. It's like the gateway to our nervous system and the remote control. So it's the only thing that we really have a prescriptive ability to shift. So we can think, oh, I'm in an upset state, or I'm in a happy state, or I'm in a tired state. I can use my breath to shift my emotional well-being or emotional state that I'm in. And it doesn't have to be like, you know, the 2 hour long breathwork journey experience that you see, you know, sensationalized on social media. It can just be, you know, 30 seconds. It can be 5 minutes. And I sort of sprinkle my practices throughout the course of the day. And sure, there's plenty of times that I'm like, oh, I want to go do this hour long class or do something on an app. Or the one thing I never do is I never lay down and do my breathwork with myself, which is the weirdest meta experience when, like, I'll make a lot of breathwork, as you know. And it's like, I do that with my audio engineer and he's like, do you want to listen to that back? And I'm like, no, absolutely not. Let me send it to someone and get feedback. But really just an odd experience, right? People will come to my trainings and be like, I was just listening to you this morning, or as I went to bed last night, I listened to you every night or something. And I'm like, you're like flattered and it's beautiful. And also you think, oh, the poor person has to listen to me every night.
Yeah, I'll get my wife a recording of me every night. She's like, that's enough. That's like, good. No. Yeah. If you're listening to this podcast and you're thinking, I want to build those skills. I want to learn how to create epic love. I want to heal from a breakup. I want to heal my nervous system as I'm in the dating process so I can choose the most aligned partner to create a future with. Well, I have the perfect opportunity for you. Because you're listening to the Create the Love podcast, you get to bypass the waiting list for the Create the Love community. You can go to createthelove.com/yes and get started with whichever course is most applicable to your life and the skill set you want to develop. And here's one thing I know for certain is that great love can't wait. You have to get started right away. Your healing can't wait. So go register now at createthelove.com/yes and get started right away.
But the breath is important because we can control if we are putting ourselves in a parasympathetic state or a sympathetic state. And you might ask, like, well, why would I want to be in a sympathetic state? If it's like, if you're feeling really depressed, really like, hey, I can't get off the couch. The weather's really terrible outside. You didn't get a lot of good sleep. Maybe you're having the 3 o'clock slump, right? It doesn't have to be a whole big dramatic thing. It could just be that you're at work like, oh, I don't want to have another cup of coffee, right? I'm going to do a little upregulating breath work, right? Putting ourselves in a more sympathetic state, getting us into, you know, like we talked about nervous system regulation. It's not a bad place to be in fight when you're going to lift, you know, 100 pounds on a barbell or something. You know, it's not a bad place to be when you're like, I have 2 more hours of work to get through, to give yourself a little bit of a fight response so that you're like, I'm in flow, I'm focused, I'm ready, I'm leaning in. So there's so many ways you can use breath to just give yourself the dose of state change that you need. And that's why I love it. And then also practicing, you know, 80% of our day, just as a loose percentage, is a good idea to be in a parasympathetic state, right? To be practicing nasal breathing when we're not talking, and nasal breathing, because that's where we mostly sit in parasympathetic mode in the body, nervous system. It's where we get the most oxygenation. You know, there's all this stuff about nasal breathing online. So I'm not telling anyone to tape their mouth closed for the rest of their lives, but just nasal breathing calmly and checking in. Like anyone who's listening to this, who's like going through it, even if, you know, I have my clients set a really beautiful little alarm on their phone that goes off once a day for a couple of weeks. And I just say beautiful alarm because you don't want it to be like, wah, 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 right. Stressor.
Yeah.
But put on your favorite song or something, have it go off at noon every day and just take 1 minute at that time to say, what hole am I breathing out of? You know, my nose or my mouth, as far as I know, that's all we got.
But or whim.
Who knows? Yeah. Or whim.
Or your a-hole. Yeah.
So it's like, am I breathing through my nose or my mouth? What am I doing right now? How am I feeling? And how are those three things potentially correlated? You know, and when it goes off different times a day, you start to forget and then you're in different modes of life. And then you can maybe just bring some awareness to how you're breathing, how you're feeling and what's happening in that moment. And that starts to make us more aware as humans. And then if you have time, you can put in 5 minutes of breath there. You know, my brother-in-law just told me as a software tech sales, these beautiful two owners of this company, 4 times a day, they schedule in, as if you're not on a plane or in some high pressured meeting, everyone in the company gets on for 5 minutes, 4 times a day. And the guy is like, box breath, let's go. And he's just coaching one of 3 or 4 different things. And that's all they need. And my brother-in-law to say that to me, doing this for years and years. And, you know, your family sometimes is like, okay, breath work or whatever, biohacking.
Okay, there's your
point. And saying, this is changing how I feel in the middle of my day. And it's just that simple, right? We can calm our state. We can move through emotional dysregulation, which, you know, I'm certainly have a heightened awareness of how quickly we can and sometimes need to shift when I wake up one feeling one way, or have a moment or a bad phone call, or some friend says, hey, did you see this thing that's going on with your ex or whatever?
And yeah.
Then I have a client call in 20 minutes. Like, how do I move through that? How do I move through that so that I can navigate the waters the best possible way?
Yeah, you need to find some regulation so you can plan the boundary that you're about to set with your friend for telling you something about your ex.
Totally. Yeah.
Which, and I think also, about that activation, that you're getting into an activated state to mobilize and set a boundary.
Yeah.
And then actually through the experience of the boundary, you're actually creating regulation, although you might be dysregulated in the setting of it and then the post-relationship impact. There is actually a path to regulation that's occurring, because what you're saying to yourself when you set a boundary is, I got me.
Yeah.
In my experience, the most regulating thing in the world is knowing that when you are presented with a choice of a behavior, a person, a way of being, if you actually have choice, you will experience regulation. Mm-hmm. It's when we have an absence of ability to choose the direction of our lives, you know, much like post-breakup, we can experience so much anxiety because there's a future that we thought that is no longer existing, so we're mourning that. And then there's a future that we're creating that we often are like, love will never be possible, and how will I ever find it again? I'm discarded, or whatever. I'm invaluable, whatever it is. Which I'm like, all of that is so important to bring forward so that we can actually own the story we want to create, which I think is the standing beside the tub or in the shower about to hit cold is so metaphorical.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
For,
and it's like, who
that.
Are you in there, right?
Yeah.
This is like, you had Peter Crone on the show. I listened to that episode like 3 times. For anyone who's listening, go back and listen to that episode.
Yeah.
and he really talks about, he was like saying, you know, the person that you're like, oh, I lost that person that I was, because when I was with my ex, I was all of these things and I loved that. And they brought, it's like, that's you. That's your good shit. Like,
right.
It's there. It's
They're just a mechanism.
You have to find it.
Yeah,
you have to find it. And like, when I get in the cold, I also have realizations, you know, and when I'm doing breath work, I have realizations about who I am, or that I'm okay, or like, at the very least, even if the choice is between the kryptonite and the thing that's a healthy choice, when you make that healthy choice, because it's hard to make the healthy choice and have the boundary choice.
Agreed.
When you make that choice, and the stimulus and response thing, man, it's like, I want to pick up that phone and do the thing and say the thing and have this, or have the tantrum, or
take
whatever.
Take it back, whatever.
And it's like, take five. It's like, before
breath work.
Take five. Yep. And do some breath work and see where you net out at the end. I have some of my clients do this little glucose regulation protocol, which is one of the breathwork protocols that's in the track that I sent you, that is like, hey, I want to go dive into the ice cream cake. But I like, how do I stop the moment of the craving or the like addiction to that thing? And again, I'm all about people having a treat from time to time. It's like, I'm
sure.
Not into punishing people, but like taking
the
pause and having 2 or 3 minutes of this breathwork pattern to then say,
excuse me.
Bless
Thanks.
You.
Yeah.
Taking 2 or 3 minutes of the breathwork pattern to then say, okay, do I want to eat the whole cake or the whole thing, or the like just have a little, or I'm like, really, actually, I'm just thirsty, or whatever else
right.
is, or emotional, or whatever.
Yeah, I'm dysregulated. Or
yeah.
For me, sugar was such a coping mechanism for being with difficult feelings, not feeling attended to, whatever it might be, not attending to myself really at the end of the day. And so when I took it away, it was like, and I always think of like, if you, in order to accommodate a choice or a relationship, have to develop the belief that you're not powerful, then you will need an addiction to numb the pain of the recognition that you have sold your shit out.
Mm-hmm.
And I always think of that, of like everything, phones included, are an escape from the recognition that you are a fucking badass. And again, it's like, not to harp on this, y'all, but I'm harping. It's like, when you get into that cold water and you get done, you feel insanely incredible. You're like, holy
and powerful.
Fuck.
And like, where have I been? I think sometimes you feel like, where have I been? I'm
where
here. I'm back. I've got my back. I'm whole. It's like, it's so, for anyone who's listening who hasn't been in cold water, it's probably like, What? This is just a cold shower. It's just an ice bath, but it is so much more. It is a microcosm of your whole life. You know, climbers say the give up is the give up on the wall. Like wherever you're climbing and you're like, oh, fuck, I can't do this. I can't get this hook. I can't do this specific climbing move, whatever it is. I'm not a climber, obviously, but they're like, the give up is the give up, right? So like when you're stuck, you're problem solving. It's a similar thing. Like when you're giving up on the cold, you're giving up in the same moment that you like might give up on yourself or your life. It's where your stopping point is. So you have to move to the next place, right? Or get in the cold for the first time to see and understand who you holistically and really are. Because there's nowhere else you can be. There's nowhere else you can
be.
That's
it. All your bullshit.
You know?
It has to, because you're so shocked into the moment. That's what I was saying, like, your walls have to come down. And then, like, when you ask yourself, like, what's being revealed to me?
Yeah.
You're like, oh my gosh, so much I forgot about me.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, and the one other thing I will say about breath is that, I'm going to get this wrong, so you'll correct me, but early on in your course, you have something that's sort of the, and it's breakup recovery recipe, I think, that you're comparing, you make a list of all the things you want, and then you go and you score your old relationship against the things that you want.
That one's a cooker.
And it's a cooker, and it's pretty activating. And for me, I was like, okay, I'm going to do one of these, and then I'm going to take like a one breath break where I take a big inhale and hold for a second, like get some oxygen in there and then exhale. And then I'm going to move on to the next one because there's so many activating pieces specifically for me. Cause I was like, oh, I gave all these things a 3. Why am I chasing it still?
Right.
I basically gave a D minus to these most important areas of my values in my old relationship. Why would I be chasing it further? But going through that required for me a little breath work. Also because I didn't want to fall into like my attachment style pattern or like be over, like ruminate too much about it or.
Or even to shame yourself for settling. Like we learn settling.
Yeah. And there's plenty of components of it that were A pluses, but it's mixing it. And you should see that the other thing that's really interesting is when I have couples that come to Cold Plunge with me and you can really see like the beautiful dance that they do and like everything from one of them going in and how the other one like witnesses them or like holds space for them or doesn't or takes photos with the camera or like babe this or you got it or cheers them on, like you can sort of see the reasons that they're together, right? Like you can see and listen and attachment styles, they like come right up and out. Because this is a stressor, right? We behave in the stress like we behave in the stress. So attachment styles come out. People who are big disassociators come out. And that can just also be people who have experienced trauma and even, you know, God forbid, water trauma. When people come with water trauma to me, that's a very different, you know, we work a little more slowly, but you'll see those things come up completely in the water. And I've had a few instances where really interesting things have come up with either how people respond to stress or their breath pattern. And that can be that could have felt unsafe, right? This is why it's important to work with a coach sometimes, or why it can be so just more holistic to work with a coach, because I take it upon myself, not every time, but quite often I take it upon myself as a part of my responsibility coaching people through breath and cold, that if something I see comes up in their nervous system and their behavior, and many people say things in the cold that they do not remember, let's be clear, right? If I see something and there's a flag in my head to be like, I really want to tell this person. I always kind of think like, is this kind? Is it going to land the right way? Is this person already beating themselves up about something? But I will, once they get out, towel off, go through their shiver response and all that, I might have a mini conversation. And I will always ask, always, would it be okay if I spoke freely with you about what I saw in the tub? And then I will just speak to them. And sometimes those things are beautiful things, right? Someone who gets in like, high-powered executive, fired a bunch of staff members like during layoffs, like didn't want to, felt terrible, felt shame, super high stressed, you know, really beating herself up like every moment of the day, and having her get out and having a conversation with her that is going to have her feel, you know, strong and empowered. Or even in the water, I'll have just one specific female I'm thinking of, but I'll have people speak to something that is like an affirmation. And there is some research too that's been done around affirmations that when we hear I am, like I am strong, I am powerful, like it's a bit, we're a bit like, okay, I know it's me saying this, and that we respond, our brain responds better to us saying you are. So I really believe in the power of someone else saying you are empowered, you are incredible, you are so successful right now, you are this beautiful human, you are so caring, you tell the best jokes, whatever it might be, right? You're just saying that. That kind of like reflection and working with cold and working with breath in people, I think it gives them in my opinion, and of course I'm the one coaching, but it gives them more understanding of who they are. Maybe there's a blind spot there, right? You do this phenomenally with your work. Plenty of mornings I get up and my, then it's weird for you or it's great for you. But like, I'm like, okay, great. Here's Mark with his little white heart. And then a 2-minute video being like, get your shit together.
Oh, and from then I'm the like, breakup work?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. The daily videos like, people love.
They're great.
They're like, just like an espresso shot of like, let's fucking go.
Totally. Yeah. My favorite part is also that like, you always look fabulous. And also, you're not like worried about if there's like what hat or what snot or what snow or what rain or wherever you are. You're like in a hotel. You're just like, I'm here and we're going to have this 2-minute conversation. It's a very come to Jesus moment. And I think that that's just so relatable. And so I think it's important that as leaders and coaches, we speak to people about the things that we see with kindness and with permission so that maybe they can start to see them too for themselves, or at least say, ah, fuck off, Kristen's wrong, but I want to unpack this other thing she brought up.
Yeah, which is so discerning anyways. Like, that's not true for me, or that's not valuable.
Yeah.
Yeah, I recently did a assisted therapy, an MDMA, psilocybin, assisted therapy with internal family systems and parts work.
Whoa.
It was wild. It was honestly, I interviewed him the day after I did it, Mike Zeller. It was profound. It was the most profound experience I've ever had in my life. And, you know, as I said in that episode, I've had a lot of profound experiences. But what it allowed me to do, which I was thinking about when you get into cold water and right before you do, and maybe if you never do, is the different parts that are in competition when there's like, we actually need access to, as you said, the resilient part, the like get shit done part, the activation part. But like how we're often stuck and freeze in our lives because different parts are like, if you move forward, that means for this other part, we're going to lose something. We're going to lose perceived safety. We're normally a people pleaser. We hold on to things. And the other part's like, let's just go. Like, if you make me, I'll bulldoze everything. And I think I was starting to feel how there was this recognition that the part of me that's always wanted to speak up was always in competition with my people pleaser part. And the part of me that felt, you know, previously my younger relationships, heartbroken, that I didn't stand up for myself in betrayals, that I didn't speak up in a lot of things. It was like, if you gave me more access and a seat at the table, none of that shit would happen, or at least we'd be proud of ourselves in the picking up of those pieces. And what was interesting about that part, and this, I just think like you act, I was just thinking about what you're saying about cold water, is that's the like, I'm getting in. And then that's the like, I hear you, this is cold, that's hard. And like, this is, I'm driving.
Like, yeah, this is everything. I can create safety for myself.
Right.
I don't have to.
You actually need that.
Yeah. And I'm like, I'm in the water. Although you can get in with a partner and there's so many beautiful ways with friends and things you can bond. But like, I'm doing this on my own. I'm stepping forward solo. I'm feeling into my own awareness. And I am not going to let like, I'm not going to let that thing on my shoulder, because you know what? Like, I could spend my life just being hyper vigilant and in service of others and just revel in it and love it and be like, oh, this is all my hurdy-poos. This is all the worst parts of me, but the best parts of me. It feels so good. Like, I could live like that and I would miss my entire life. Mm. And to put that shit down and to put down my dad passing and the splits and the hard times and to be able to say, okay, where are the places that I can know that I've got my own back? And like, very strongly, one of those is I get into the cold, I make the choice, I go through the process, I get to decide the time, the temperature, everything that's going on there, what comes up for me. I get to decide to stay and process or avoid it if I want to, or just temporarily put it aside. I get to be emotional, I get to regulate, and I can tap into my breath to say, okay, my body is processing these things way faster than I can. I get to create the thought that goes along with this, right? And there's so much about, you know, when you tell this, when you talk about the people pleasing part and all the things, and you're like, my voice is here. And then you think about all the work that you've done by actually using the same voice. That's the voice that's like, go get in the tub,
right?
To help other people. It's like, what would we have done without that? You know, it's like, what would we have done? It's like the highest expression of who we are as humans. And it's, you know, there are plenty of people out there being like, oh, Kristen's doing this cute little breath and cold thing. And I'm like, this is for me, this is my peak expression, because people, I'm not healing people. people are getting in and I'm like just that Sherpa, just that guide, like weaving them a little bit forward because maybe I've walked the path a little longer than they have. And I'm like, here's the thing, do the thing. And then people are like having these realizations, or I'm giving them a little bit of a sweet nudge, mindful smack, whatever you want to call it. And they're going, holy fuck, I can do all the things and I can let go of the thing I have to let go of in order to create the new human that I'm becoming, right? Mm. This is this like power of becoming. It's scary and it can be scary to do it alone, but we really, that's what we have. And I think the better we do these things deliberately and in a fashion that's supporting, like getting our own backs, then we can go and live a life. And then the things that, when the papers get served and the breakups happen and all that, we're at least like, okay, I got me, I have my awareness, I have my community, I'm holding my own. And we can survive it in a very different way, right? Yeah. In a more palatable way.
Well, and it's amazing when we're going through transition, we throw away often the practices that we have that mm-hmm. keep us connected to ourselves because mm-hmm. we don't know how to be connected to ourselves and in suffering. Mm-hmm. So it's like, what a practice. This is why what's happening in the tub or in the water is so micro to the meta mm-hmm. of like, can I still move forward? And I remember the question I asked myself right before I went in and did a closing ceremony with Kylie in our previous relationship. I remember I was sitting in the car and I didn't want to go in to the house to do this closing ceremony, which I was like, who the fuck does this? This is bananas. But I remember thinking like, do I not want to go in because I just genuinely don't want to? Or do I not want to go in because the person who can do that doesn't exist yet? It's like by going in, I become. And I think of that now with everything in my life of like, even actually if I want to avoid the cold plunge, which I'm now like bringing this question to that, like through our conversation of like, am I avoiding it because I just genuinely don't want to do it? Or am I avoiding it because it's hard? Mm-hmm. And I maybe don't believe I have the capacity for that, but is the truth actually, I just... The person who can do it is created by doing.
Yeah, absolutely. That's so beautifully put, Mark. So beautifully put. It's the same reason that you're like, I don't need to go sub 45.
Right, right. It's like, I don't, because he doesn't exist.
I know, but we.
But he's about to.
But he's about to. And like, it's just the using the ice bath as the metaphor, it's like the betterment and the creation and the more creation and the more creation that's coming from that becoming that is the leaning into, right? Like how much do we let fear affect us? It's like the leaning into over and over and over again, right? It's like, if we're specifically going to talk about, it's like getting into cold, making sure that it's cold enough that you might have a little anticipation or a little gasp or a little just moment, even if you're quiet and you're pro style and you're head dunking all day long. And then that you get out and you let your body have this cascade of a shiver, because a lot of times we get so adapted, and this is how you'll be able to tell too, if you're like, becoming at the rate with which Mark Groves wants to be coming, which is, how do I get out of the tub and do I have a shiver response? Am I getting enough of a shiver response? But it's not that I'm like convulsing or I'm not hypothermic, obviously, but a little shiver response to send the signal to my cell to change, to get better, to create more longevity, to have better mechanism of action around metabolism and mood and everything. And so if you look at that tiny microcosm and you look at everything you're saying, that's what it is. It's just a little step forward, right? It's a small steps forward hermetically, this just enough stretch that we're not like, oh my God, I imploded. I mean, sometimes we're like, oh, that was too far. But hopefully, you know, you survive that and you say, what are the small steps to be able to create the next version of myself?
It's amazing how much we all need challenge in order to grow in any way. And that's just a principle of biology and physiology. And yet, you know, I think of the world we have been challenged by, maybe not even that recently now, is that people want to remove all the triggers in their life and cancel anything and anyone who says anything that is actually provided, not to say that we're encouraging harm or anything like that, but it's like, I remember my sister once saying to me, everybody wants to change the world so they're not triggered by the world, instead of figuring out why are they triggered. Like, you'll never be able to control your environment fully. Yeah. And it's like, if my only response is to try to make it so the world is the safest, quote unquote, possible place, it's impossible. And so we'll like hide away from life, or we'll like attack people for us feeling dysregulated, which is such a mind fuck to think like I'm not in any way responsible for my own experience. And of course, my work, much like your work, is like, take responsibility for everything in your life, because everything that is currently in your life is there because you're checking a box that says yes to it. Mm-hmm. Without actually taking responsibility for the full level of choice you're actually making, you can't unchoose it. So you have to like recognize that the choice exists first, even if you don't like it, even if you're mad at me, even though I say that, it's like still you need to come to the conclusion with the hardest things. That's why it's so difficult. It's like we could be in an abusive relationship and we'll say like, I don't have a choice. And there might be truth to like the financial and all that kind of stuff. We're not dismissing any of that. But it's like if we were to say, okay, if I now recognize that I'm making this choice because I don't have access to regulation and safety and all that, okay. Mm-hmm. What would a plan look like that could create those things? That now we're free.
Yeah.
We're on our way. But at least now we're in choice, and there's a freeing thing, a nervous system thing that mm-hmm. kind of we go, oh, I don't like that. I need more context. This is because my mom and dad did this, and it, great. It's not your fault. But like, no one's coming to save us.
Yeah.
And that's like one of the most annoying quotes of all time. Like, no one's coming to save you.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
but but everything you're saying, it's like, and everyone who's listening, it's like, it's not your fault. It's really not your fault.
It isn't.
Never your fault. It's like your parents, parents. Oh, there's so many things, so many things. And you'll find them when you're, you know, when you're like, yeah. I need a reason. It can't be me. But the total de-victimization of the situation, of you in the situation, and then being like, okay, it's like somebody along the way of some things I listen to or read or something were like, you know, if you... I know that you didn't choose this, but if you were to have chosen it, why do you think that would be coming up?
Right.
Why do you think it would be in your frame right now? Just let's play a game, right? And there's some real potent answers that lie in those arenas. And I think, yeah, no one is coming to save us. And also, we have to have ourselves.
Yeah, and so much of the template of whatever creates our relationship dynamics and the choices of what we believe is acceptable in our lives, mm-hmm. that's context. Yeah, that's important. It's like, oh, that's because my mom and dad, da-da-da-da-da. And that, I think what often is missing in the complexity of choices we make in our lives is the compassion for that you could be a victim of something, yet you got to take responsibility for what you're going to do with it. And we mm-hmm. think that if I'm taking responsibility, it means it's victim blaming. And I would say, actually, no, it's actually the bridge to the transformation. You know, and I think it's often dismissed through the statement victim blaming, that there is a possibility and that in somehow or some way removes the compassion that is required to move across that bridge. Mm-hmm. We like live in such a binary culture. It's like you're either this or you're that. You're either da, 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 da. And it's like, nah, humanity is so much more complex than you're pro-life, you're not. You're pro-vax, you're not. You're pro-Trump, you're pro-Kamala, you're pro-whatever, or anti. It's like, nah, humanity is so much more complex. And I think when we give ourselves the grace of that by... Yeah. Sitting in the tub, which is kind of wild to think about, that like nuance is formulated through yeah. being with all that stuff.
Yeah. And I don't know how you were when you are, maybe this gets to it in your book. I haven't gotten to that spot yet, but how you were specifically around the breakup and navigating it. But I feel like there are many, many people and even people I work with, it's like rumination and trying to think their way through it.
Yeah.
And so I think this is where breath and cold come really to the forefront, because it's like, oh, sometimes you hear this from people too. Sometimes they're like, I just need to go to sleep so I can stop thinking about it, thinking about the thing, the act, the death, right. the loss, the grief, this, whatever it might be. And the new person even, right? The obsessing over the, yeah. the first date that you had that you're like, oh, we're already going to be married. You already know. Yeah. You don't even know them. But that the powerful pause of the breath. And if the breath isn't going to get you there, trust me, when you get into cold, you already know. Yeah. You're like, okay, I'm here.
Right. The bridge.
I'm here. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. So appreciate you. Yeah. You came for breath and cold and ta-da. It's actually about everything else.
Yeah.
Really appreciate the work that you do.
Thanks.
And thank you for giving your gifts in the experience of the breakup course with cold water exposure and breath work. I did both of them and I was like, wow, okay, this is perfect.
Yeah.
Because it, as I said, it's incomplete without. So where can people go find more of you?
Yeah. SherpaBreathAndCold.com. My Insta handle is biohacking.breath.cold, all things there. And then, yeah, in the new year, I have a nervous system rehab course coming out, which is a mini course that's really focused on anxiety and heartache. And heartache, I say, because your heart's not broken, it's working.
Right.
That's why you feel the way you feel. And it's a good reminder of the thing that you always said, which is you can hold both the pain and the possibility.
Mm.
And that, to me, speaks so many volumes about the state of as we live on this planet and the very best way we can human. So, yeah, SherpaBreathAndCold.com/rehab. Let's just go there. And I'm so appreciative to just, yeah, sit and share this time with you.
Thanks so much for flying in and all of it. Appreciate you.
Yeah, of course.